friends of Mosquito Lake School get ready to speak against classifying the school for sale, and two Southeast representatives file a herbicide spraying bill. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. The future of Mosquito Lake School is uncertain, and some Upper Valley residents do not want to let it slip through their fingers. They call themselves Friends of Mosquito Lake School and Community Center. At their Wednesday night meeting, the main topic was stopping the potential sale of the school. There have been a lot of meetings that have to do with Mosquito Lake School one way or another this week. It came up at both the school board and borough assembly meetings. But the big one for Friends of Mosquito Lake School is tonight. The Borough Planning Commission will decide whether to recommend classifying the school property for sale. If they do recommend that, then the borough assembly could vote to actually put the building up for sale. Borough Manager Dave Sosa says classifying the facility for sale does not mean it will definitely be sold. He says it just makes the option possible if it were to be the best choice. Sosa says there is no interested buyer right now. The property is worth about $810,000. Friends of Mosquito Lake School want to keep the facility borough-owned to serve as a school and community gathering place. Jim Stanford compared the resources of people in town to what people in the Upper Valley have.
They have multiple facilities to hold meetings that are available for the public, and I counted 8 today. We've got 1. That's a powerful statement.
Marianne Rasmussen says they'll have about 200 preserve and protect the school petition signatures to show the Planning Commission.
Most people are very happy to sign, and they can't figure out why this is moving so fast and why we would sell a school.
The easiest way to reopen Mosquito Lake School is to get 10 students. Then it would qualify for state funding. The Haines School District plans to send out a survey to parents to gauge whether there are enough interested families to reopen next year. That survey is posted online, and the residents aren't overjoyed with it. Here's Tish Hallett.
You've read the survey. It says Mosquito Lake School was closed because of declining enrollment. Would you like to send your kid? You know, I mean, it really says nothing.
Yeah,
no. There are no attributes of a small school, of any small rural school. There's nothing there.
The group wants the survey to give more reasons why sending one's child to Mosquito Lake School could be an appealing option. They plan to ask Superintendent Ginger Jewell to revise the survey before sending it out. Here's Rasmussen.
You realize, wow, you know, this small classroom is an advantage, you know, and it might be really an advantage for some kids that get a little overwhelmed in a big classroom, or, you know, a kid that wants a very active outdoor program, or, you know, some of the other things we've talked about.
Friends of Mosquito Lake School will also look at other options for the building if there aren't enough students to reopen it. And tonight, they plan to show up in force to the Planning Commission meeting. As one member put it, they want to demonstrate that they are Haines too, not just the people over there. The meeting is at 6:30 in Borough Assembly Chambers. Sitka Democratic Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins and Ketchikan Independent Dan Ortiz, along with Les Guerra of Anchorage, are filing a bill Friday that would reinstate public comment for state agencies looking to spray herbicides or pesticides on state land. The bill is a response to concerns from residents in Petersburg, Prince of Wales Island, and elsewhere in Southeast over plans by the state to spray for vegetation control along roadways. Several municipalities have passed resolutions opposing spraying after the Department of Environmental Conservation in 2013 eliminated a permitting requirement and public comment period for the practice. Residents are concerned about chemical contamination of plants, fish, and wildlife gathered for food on public land. The legislation could require a public hearing for spraying plans if requested by a municipality. It would require a state agency to find that spraying would not harm fish or drinking water sources, and it would require a public comment opportunity for herbicide or pesticide spraying. In a press release Thursday, Christ Tompkins said he believed the public deserved, quote, protections and public process before pesticides are sprayed along public highways and in watersheds. The bill is among a second batch of legislation to be released Friday in advance of the new session starting on Tuesday. A public meeting Monday night on how activities fit into middle school rekindled sore feelings about the Juneau School District's ban on middle school sports travel. Lisa Fu has more.
When the school board decided to ban travel for middle school athletics, a decision that went into full effect this school year, many attempts were made to reverse the decision. Parents and students organized petitions, protests, and spoke at board meetings. A group called Save Our Middle School Sports started on Facebook, and community members formed a task force to look at alternatives to the ban. The school board wasn't swayed by any of it. Then President Sally Sadler said the board wouldn't revisit the issue unless the district's Activities Advisory Committee developed a middle school activities philosophy. Floyd Dryden Middle School Assistant Principal Haifa Siddiqui is on the committee. She says it started working on a philosophy last spring.
It was almost like, let's get this done, and then that might be able to provide us with a platform for advocacy and then move into revisiting the policy.
Right now, the philosophy is a one-page document stating the mission of activities in the middle school. Teacher Molly Box is also on the advisory committee. She says early drafts of the philosophy included the opportunity for middle school athletic travel.
But because the policy is there right now that there is no travel, it was contradictory to put it in our philosophy at this point. But the AAC is very supportive of middle school travel as an opportunity for all kids.
The philosophy does say intramural and interscholastic activities will be offered at both middle schools. District Activities Director Sandy Wagner clarified intramural is competition within one school. Interscholastic involves two or more.
There's no limit as to how many schools. Right now you can't travel to do that, but 5 years from now that may change. 6 months from now that may change. Who knows?
In order for the board to revisit the middle school athletic travel ban, three board members would have to agree to put it on the agenda. Board member Brian Holst asked to do just that in November. No one else on the board supported him. Middle school parent Scott McAdams says the issue should be looked at again.
What we found out this year through the icebreaker tournament, if we don't travel to Ketchikan or Blatchley and Sitka or make a village trip or two, those teams will not come here.
The annual middle school basketball tournament in the capital city historically attracts up to five visiting communities. At the icebreaker in December, only one showed up. Parent Rhoda Yadao has an eighth grade son who plays basketball. She said he was disappointed.
Looking at it going forward, he says, well, I sure hope the kids under me are able to have the opportunity to travel.
The Activities Advisory Committee hopes to finalize the middle school activities philosophy this week and present it to the school board in February. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
A couple in Klawak on Prince of Wales Island has been engaged since 2001, but they couldn't quite come to agreement about what kind of wedding ceremony to have. They finally settled on a unique venue, center court at halftime during Friday's home basketball game. KRBD's Layla Carey has the story.
Lisa George definitely didn't want a traditional wedding with the church or the dress or any of that frilly stuff. Jared Barlow definitely didn't want to go to the courthouse with just a judge, a couple of witnesses, and no fanfare. Last fall, they finally made a decision.
Lisa said, we'll have it at the first basketball game. There's your time and your place. You set it up.
That's another thing. The bride wants nothing to do with planning.
All she's got to do is walk in and show up.
There's no wedding dress either, although there are rumors that a veil might end up pinned to her Klawak chieftain's jersey.
I don't know. I just planned on being in my chieftain gear in whatever my cousins and aunties and relatives figure it out. We'll go from there.
While George has stayed out of it, Barlow wasn't completely on his own when planning the wedding. Other residents of the tight-knit community of Klawak have rallied to help.
The biggest issue that I've had was trying to make sure that my family from out of town could come up.
That includes Barlow's father, who's performing the ceremony and had a long 4-day trip from a village in Peru, where he's now living. Barlow says he met George online as he was planning to move to Klawak. He'd started his Alaska residency in Sitka, drawn there by his sister, who was attending Sheldon Jackson College.
And she sent me a bunch of pictures of the water and the hillsides. And so I said, that's where I got to go. And I moved to Sitka in June of 99.
Barlow says the tourism in Sitka was too much for him. So about a year later, he moved to Prince of Wales Island. He wanted to find out more about Klawak before moving, so he did a search on Yahoo Messenger. That's how we met George.
I've tried to duplicate that search since then and have never been able to duplicate a search to find her anywhere.
Now, about 15 years later, wedding bells will ring, or halftime buzzers will sound, as the couple finally ties the knot. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.